The years, Valerie and I have walked together with Christ, there have been these moments of great change in our lives that were brought about by Jesus breaking our chains. The greatest Independence Day of my life was not on the 4th of July, but actually May 3rd, 1974. Some of you, most of you, any of you alive then? I doubt it. That was the day that I knelt in my youth pastor's living room and God set me free from all kinds of stuff. Later on, he set my hair free. But that day, it was a good Independence Day. And I want to talk to you about that. You know, I don't want to be trite and minimize the wonder and the value and the power and the privilege it is to be people who live in a place that can celebrate Independence Day like we can. But the part of that that I'm most grateful for is that we can stand here together and talk about Jesus without fear of armed people coming through the doors and escorting us to some place we don't want to go. We sometimes forget how incredible that gift is to us. But we also forget, even I think more so, how amazing the gift that Jesus gave us when he did what we could not do for ourselves, and that is to break the bondage under which we previously lived. John chapter 11 contains one of the most powerful narratives in all of the New Testament. It's the story of the raising of Lazarus. And it's just an amazing presentation of this story. And I don't want to read the whole chapter to you because it's just kind of, I don't want you to get lost in trying to read along, but I want to talk about it a little bit because it's incredible, and I want to read the ending part of that. What happens is that Lazarus, who's a friend of Jesus, and sisters Mary and Martha, who were followers of Jesus, well known to him, very much a part of his life and ministry as he walked on earth. And Lazarus dies. Jesus gets word about his illness and impending death, and he decides to stay where he's at for a couple more days. They send for him. And when we read the story, we realize that Jesus said, I'll stay here, but in my staying here, God will be glorified even more. Well, that didn't make sense to anybody, but, you know, We have a hard time thinking his thoughts. His thoughts are not our thoughts, and his ways are not our ways. And so in the course of this story, as it unfolds, we realize that by the time he gets to Bethany where Lazarus was, he'd been dead 4 days. And as his friends Mary and Martha both greet him one at a time, the first thing each of them say to him is, "If you had been here, my brother... If you had been here, our brother would not be dead." They weren't being disrespectful. In fact, Mary falls on her knees before she even says that to him. Sometimes we look at it and we think they're really fussing at Jesus. They're kind of expressing their displeasure with the way he decided to do his job. But that's not really the case. They're honest, open people who know him well enough to say, "I don't get it." And Jesus, he tells them, "If you'll trust me, I'm the resurrection and the life. And if you'll trust me, things are going to be better. I'm here, and because I'm here, we're gonna see some great things happen." And so as the story continues to unfold, he asked them, do you believe this? And well, they said, well, yeah, actually, we do believe this. And so the mourners are all there. Everybody's kind of watching to see what's going to happen. In fact, in verse 35, maybe you grew up in church and you had to memorize a Bible verse. And so if you didn't get your Bible verse memorized before you went to church, you memorized John 11:35. Jesus wept. Well, the beauty of that two-word phrase is that he wept because he knew he loved his friends and he could see their grief. And in that weeping and in that being there with him in the midst of something so tragic as the loss of a brother, Jesus is moved. Already knowing what he's going to do, now determined than ever. And so we pick the story up in verse 38, and I want to read through verse 44 to you. It says, Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. And of course, Martha had to respond first, and she said, but Lord, by this time there's a bad odor, for he's been there for 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you've heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I have said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they might believe you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, get ready to hear him, okay? Kind of take yourself to being a part of that crowd for a moment. Can you use your 11-year-old imagination or your 4-year-old imagination and just transport yourself for a moment? Because if you'll find a way to get there in your mind and visualize what's going on, it's going to send chills down your spine, because Jesus then looks around and for the benefit of everybody else, he's had this prayer, and then he said, Lazarus, come out. And the dead man came out. Chills go down my spine as I read that. And the dead man came out, and his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. And Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes. And I love this part. And let him go. That's freedom. That's victory. That's the kind of thing that when we experience his power and presence, that no court system, no political system can take away from us. It's God's gift to us through the grace that he gave us. Anyone, as we sang, can enter in. In 42 years of life, which makes this guy about my age, DeMarlo Berry is his name. He'd spent in prison that he'd spent out of prison. At 19, he was sent to prison in Las Vegas because he was wrongfully convicted of a murder of a manager of a Carl's Jr., which for us would be Hardee's restaurant. And his misfortune was that he happened to be standing out on the street when it happened, and a witness mistook him for the perpetrator of the crime. And just in the last couple of days, he was released from prison. And people consistently were asking him, what's it like to know that you spent your entire adult life in prison? And his answer back to them intrigued me. His answer was, everybody keeps asking that question. But he said, I have so much adult life ahead of me. It's that whole idea of this fresh start thing. All of a sudden, this man who had been entombed, if you will, in bondage, if you will, imprisoned behind bars, is set free. And he goes back to his hometown of Las Vegas, and he doesn't even recognize it. New buildings, new freeways, historic old things gone, brand new bright lights in their place. And it's a brave new world. I mean, this guy's got to learn how to live all over again. But he gets to learn how to live where he can look at his wife anytime he wants. And he can just go outside and go for a walk and enjoy that beautiful 110-degree weather in Las Vegas this time of year. And he can make a choice about where he goes and what he does. And even at 42, he can find meaning and he can find purpose in his life again because he's been set free. And when I think about his story, I think, you know, are a lot of us that have spent a lot of time entombed, in bondage, wrapped in linen cloths. Some of us have lived in fear. I loved being able to just really celebrate and worship. As we said, I'm no longer a slave to fear. You know, I think fear is one of those things that rob us of our independence, our freedom in Christ, more than almost anything else. We're afraid to step out in faith. And so we just try to build a comfortable world around us, a familiar world around us. And in the process, we get nowhere, really. Someone once said that even if you're in the right lane, going the right direction, if you're sitting still, you're still going to get run over. And I think that's what happens to a lot of us in our lives. We're just paralyzed and bound by the grave clothes of our own choosing sometimes, by the grave clothes of our environment sometimes. But then I read this passage, and there are some things that really jump out at me. One of those things is that as long as there is Jesus, there is hope. I want to just raise the question, and obviously you don't have to give an answer since it probably wouldn't be the right spot, but do you ever feel sentenced to the life you're now living? Like, this is the way it's always going to be. It's never going to get any better. When will this end? It's never going to end. When will I be able to let go of this fear? When will I be able to let go of this habit that keeps me bound? When will I be able to let go of this part of my life that's so toxic for me? When will I be able to be free from this sin that overwhelms me and overcomes me? I'm sentenced to it. You ever feel that way? I think all of us have at times. I mean, if anybody had a reason to feel like things weren't going to change, it would have been Lazarus. He's one of a handful, right? And yet, what happens in this story? They Mary and Martha come and they're saying, "I don't know what the deal is. You didn't come." And yet, Jesus spoke one word. Well, actually, more than one word, but it was this in his speaking this word. All he did was speak, and death became life. All he did was speak, and bondage became liberty. All he did was speak, and a man who was bound was let go. It's Sometimes the loss of hope is the worst thing that can happen to us. In fact, in Proverbs 13:12, it says, Hope deferred makes the heart sick. And some of us are just kind of walking around and going through life, figuring that there's just no hope for us. A guy was on his first cruise and he got seasick. I've never been seasick, but I hear it's not very pretty. And as he was being seasick on the deck, one of the cruise line employees came by and said, don't be discouraged, sir. No one's ever died of seasickness before. And the seasick guy looked at him and said, don't say that. It's the only hope of dying that's keeping me going here. I guess he felt pretty sick, you know. And I think sometimes we look at life and we feel bound and we feel enslaved and we feel captured and we feel imprisoned and we feel in bondage. And all of a sudden, we hear about this Jesus who can break the chains that hold us back, who can defeat the opponents that we face. And I want to tell you something. As long as there's Jesus, there's hope. But even better than that is that there is always Jesus. He was and is and will be forever. So here's the thing. What we can know since there's always Jesus is that when he shows up in our lives, it's never at the wrong time. It's never too little and it's never too late. See, Mary and Martha were, even though they were just being honest and open and transparent, one of the things they were doing in the process was saying to Jesus, you know, I think it's a little too late and a little, you know, there's not much else to do here. Death is pretty final. But Jesus chose his time in such a way that he got there and God was glorified in even greater ways. And instead of a sick Lazarus being made well, a dead Lazarus was made alive. What a powerful difference. You know, the whole thing looked over. When I read the story, every time I'm struck by the fact that the whole thing looked over. He's in the tomb 4 days. Martha says, don't open the tomb. Don't do that. It's just going to embarrass everybody. It's just going to be offensive to everybody. It's too little, too late. And he says, no, it's not. Listen to this. And he walks to that tomb and he says, Lazarus, come on out of there. And the dead man gets up and he says, let him go. See, it wasn't over. And here's the thing. In my life and in yours, no matter how over things seem, Jesus always has the last word. Until he's finished with a situation, it's not over. In fact, in Philippians chapter 1, he writes to the church there in Philippi, and he says that, you know, I'm confident of this. I am confident that the one who began a good work in you will bring it to completion on the day of Christ. In other words, what he's saying to them is that he will never stop working on you. And so right now where you sit, if you're not happy with it, if you're feeling like there's some places of imprisonment, if you feel like there's some places where you're bound, where the linen cloths are too much, if you're feeling like there's some of those spots in your life, can I tell you? That he has the last word. He's going to continue to work in your life as long as you let him. And that's independence. The recognition that he's not finished with me. That he'll never finish with me until that day we meet face to face. And so I want to tell you something today, and that is that when he speaks words of forgiveness to you, they're real. They matter. And they'll come to you when you need them most. When he speaks words of hope to you, It's never too little or too late. It's always the right time. There have been times, quite honestly, when I've wanted to look at him face to face and say, would you hurry up? I bet I'm not alone, am I? And then 2 days later, as the story puts it, however that fits metaphorically for you, he shows up. But here's the thing that we've learned. He always shows up. Mary and Martha figured that out in this story. And in the story of your life, what you'll find out is that while it might seem like things are over and it's too little and it's too late, it's always more than enough. It's always more than enough. It's always more than enough. And it's always at the right time. See, one of the things the whole Gospel of John is about is the time of Jesus. When it was time for him to do the things that he did. And I want you to know that if it seems too late, it's not. You can't get out of his reach. Okay? You can't get out of his reach. You might find your way into a tomb bound with linen cloths in the spiritual sense, in the emotional sense, and even the financial sense, and all kinds of different places. You might find yourself entombed, if you will. But you can't get away from him. You can't get so far from him, he can't reach you. If he can reach Lazarus after he's died, he can find you in your guilt, your shame, your hopelessness, your despair, your boredom, your joylessness, your loneliness. And he can transform it with just a word to you. Well, so what that tells me is then that I can take whatever it is that binds my life, and that you can take whatever makes you feel imprisoned and lay it at his feet, because he's greater than anything else on the planet. I mean, that seems really like a simple statement, right? If you believe in Jesus, you believe that. But so many times we really don't act like we believe it. We go ahead and live in bondage. We go ahead and live in fear. We go ahead and live enslaved to these particular sins that we can't let go of, not realizing, not really embracing the idea that if he can walk to the tomb of Lazarus and say, "Death, where is your sting?" Then he can walk to the stuff in my life, he can walk to the stuff in your life, and he can say, "I got this." And so in the midst of our greatest struggles, there is this authentic hope and this reason for believing that things will get better with him. Death is the one thing we can pretty much all agree that is stronger than we are. But most of us feel like, you know, at times we can take on stuff and, "Oh yeah, Jesus, help me." But we want to take care of our own life. We want to fix our own life. That keeps us in bondage. When the minute we decide to fix our own life, the minute we think that we've got the capacity to defeat things that are stronger than us, we are choosing to live without freedom. But in this context, what I see is that Jesus goes to that which is our most formidable opponent, death, and says, "I can defeat that." Not only did he defeat it in Lazarus' life, but he defeated it in his own life. And there's some of you who have seen him defeated in loved ones' lives because they're now alive with him. And if he can defeat death, then why in the world don't I just bring the hardest parts of my life and ask him in his time, and in his way, to speak to them and set me free? Can I be honest? I think there are probably some of us who need to have that conversation with Jesus. But here's the great news. This is powerful news. This is stuff to celebrate. I mean, we ought to be having fireworks after church today, because we realize that no matter where we are, no matter what we've done, no matter where we've been, no matter how much shame we've felt, no matter what socioeconomic background we come from, even if we come from this one or that, you know, whatever our circumstances are, there's hope. He's never too late. He's always on time. And so, could we do something? Could we celebrate today our independence by bringing to Him that which is our greatest obstacle? And instead of trying to defeat things by willpower, what if we just gave them to Him and let Him speak a word of freedom to them? That's something to celebrate. And I really want you to celebrate today what God not only has done in your life, but whatever comes next. What if Mary and Martha, instead of wondering where Jesus had been, anticipated that He was coming? They could have arranged a great party, and they could have had their fireworks display for the Independence Day, and they could have had everything all set, and they could have celebrated in some great ways. Well, we have that chance because we now know. We've read the book. So, you take this time and celebrate the reality that Jesus will always be at work, and He can set you free. Hey, guess what we're going to do? We're going to wind things up a little differently today. This whole idea of celebrating. You know, we celebrate, you know, our political freedom, our national freedom. We celebrate that. So, in just a minute, the band is going to lead us in this song of celebrating our freedom, celebrating that our chains are gone, celebrating that God has done something great in our lives. And so we're going to sing and celebrate that. You can pray. You can respond however you want. You can, you know, find somebody to pray with you. You can just worship and celebrate and sing. But in the process of that, here's the thing. Make sure you're thinking about how great His spoken word is. He spoke, the world exists. He spoke, Lazarus is raised. He speaks, and your sin is forgiven, and your hope is restored. So as we celebrate in worship, as we sing, let Him speak to you. And when the song's over, if you want to hang out and pray, that's fine. If you want to be dismissed, that's fine. But the song will be the end of the service. So pray with me now, and then worship with these guys, and leave with celebration going on in your heart. Happy Independence Day. Father, thank You so much for the freedom that we enjoy to worship in this country without fear, for the people who have helped us, sacrificially helped us find that freedom and keep that freedom. But Lord, thank You that it's true that even if our political freedom was taken away from us tomorrow, we would still be free people, because in Christ we are free indeed. And so we celebrate that today. We celebrate that no matter what it is, no matter what it is, You can speak to that part of our lives and set us free. So may we celebrate that freedom. May fireworks be going off in our hearts. And as we go from this place, may we leave as free people. Amen.